free. Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty. Sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan. Or is it a state of mind? Never forget!
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Do I have you?
Yes, sir.
All right. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. It is Wednesday, the 26th of April in the year 2006, and I'm glad you're with us tonight, and I'm glad that Alan's with us tonight also. Alan, thanks for being here tonight.
It's a pleasure, yeah.
Uh-huh. So what's going on?
Oh, I'm just busy with all the emails that are coming in.
Uh-huh.
And getting stuff printed up for sending out. That's really what takes the time, is making up them up. And
oh, you're talking about the books?
Yeah.
I've taken them up to get them copied?
That's right.
Good, and you've been...
I went in Monday yesterday for another bunch, and I went into chapters, and the same thing happened that happened before. I was first there to make sure when it opened, and she said come back about 12-ish. I came back at 1 p.m. and they hadn't started it. She said both machines broke down when they tried to do the double-sided.
Oh, geez.
And the people, of course, were coming and going with the single sheet copies, the side copies. So again, it worked fine for the other ones, but not for me. So I managed to go to another small printer who did do them up in about an hour.
So go to the small printer from now on.
Yeah. So that was quite something.
Well, I'm glad to hear you're getting orders for that book.
Yeah.
Because you were losing faith. Mm-hmm. Or maybe, I don't know, but, you know, like you said, well, people don't like to read.
They
well,
don't.
Well, there's a certain type of people, I believe, that listen to the Sweet Liberty broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you've been on here with us on and off ever since 1998.
Mm-hmm.
And they're different. I believe they're different, or they wouldn't be listening, Alan.
There'll also be another group, I think, as well, that are newcomers from the other shows, you know.
Uh-huh.
And maybe that's part of it, too.
It would be interesting if people, when they wrote, say where they heard you.
Yeah.
And did they, we better make sure, in fact, maybe you could do that right now,
mm-hmm.
is to let our listeners, well, I can do it. Folks, if you're ordering Alan's books, those are the three that he's done cutting through, 1, 2, and 3. He cannot take personal checks. And he cannot use a postal money order, a U.S. postal money order. So when you order the books, please either send an international postal money order, and you can get them right at your post office. And I live in the Boons, and I can get them from our little post office. So I know that any post office you go into, just tell them you need an international postal money order, or you can send... the funny money, FRN, Federal Reserve notes.
That's right. I've got a bunch here that I have to send back because they're all just internal postal orders for the U.S.
Uh-huh.
And it says it right on it where they sign their name, valid only within the United States.
Well, I know, but you know what? I'm not making excuses, but I don't know if I'd read that.
Uh-huh.
If I went in and asked for a money order, I don't know if I'd read that.
Uh-huh.
so that's why I wanted to make it real, real clear. And I'm not doing this in a way that denigrates people. I just know that it's so natural just to go in and get a postal money order. So we have to make sure when we do talk about it that people do understand that a U.S. postal money order or a personal check is not going to get it. All right.
It's international. It's got to be international.
Yes, it has to be international.
And it's the same. You buy it at the same price, as far as I know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it speeds things up for my end, rather than me sending them all back and then waiting for them coming back again.
Yes. Well, I'm glad to hear that people are ordering the book, Alan. What it shows me is that they want to find out for themselves. And they want to do further research.
Yeah, these books.
Rather than just sit and be entertained by
yeah.
two people having a conversation.
Yeah, that's right. See, these books are written to just sort of try and wake the person up as they're reading them.
Yes.
Because I've realized that all the books with the usual format and Illuminati and all this kind of stuff, because we're trained in a certain way, they don't remember it. It doesn't have an impact on them. And so I use a different technique of writing where they almost participate. In other words, it makes them think as they're reading.
Well, in some of those photocopies of pictures, drawings,
mm-hmm.
and from the writings from the old books.
Oh, yeah.
Because those go back a long way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I had one of our listeners write me, and he says, oh, I just found out you been hanging out with Alan Watt. And he says you were just blowing, I forget what it said, you were blowing away his something.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, he meant that, of course, in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind. The reason I brought that up was, it had slipped my mind.
But what you find is, there's so much stuff. People will ask me often, what other books can I read about? And so on. And I think you'll find on the major bookshelves, books are purposely put out there for a paper trail to be laid for you. And whatever is exposing masonry generally comes from masons themselves, or the very high masons. And it's time to expose certain parts because they don't need the lower Freemasonry anymore. So I tell people, don't waste your money buying the oohs and ah type books that astound you with the ooh and ah. These are put out there for your consumption, because the real stuff is held by the elite. Although you can teach people, because you can discern between the lines what they're referring to, especially if you understand history.
Well, you know what, you're right.
Uh-huh.
Because I've reread stuff that I've read in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And so much jumps out at me, Alan, that I would have never noticed before.
Yeah.
And one of the things, in fact, I responded this to, maybe it was this gentleman, but I didn't know about the priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you certainly, you know, made us very aware of that right in those beginning 20 hours that we did on the air. It wasn't 20 hours in a row. But it was four nights a week for five nights, an hour each time. And it was our primer course, wasn't it, Alan?
Yes, yeah, definitely.
But the interesting thing is, so much of what I read, it mentions very casually, almost offhandedly, the priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always there.
It's always there.
It's always there. Mm-hmm. And even though I'm rereading stuff, I never noticed it before. Never noticed it before. And then in the place where it is, it really does confirm what you had told us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the world's been under a controlled system for such a long time, and people think we're just evolving with technology and this kind of
right.
thing. They don't realize that outside the technology, it's the same money-type system, the same work ethic for the people. In other words, that's your function, is to serve the system. And they don't realize that this has been manipulated down through the thousands of years. The same system, really. commerce, and, money.
And pre-Sumer.
Pre-Sumer, definitely. Sumer, they didn't invent this by themselves. In fact, they sprung up out of nowhere with this whole system right there. So they learned it from a previous civilization, which they think are called the Harappans. And the Harappans, no doubt, got it from even an older civilization.
What? I've never... Harappan.
Yeah, the Harappans is the name the historians and the archaeologists are giving to the people who inhabited cities they're digging up now underneath all of the old Sumerian trade routes. And these houses were very well built. They even had indoor running water and showers even. And we're going 6,000, 7,000 BC. So this is an ancient commercial type system that's come down through the ages. Money is the key to everything. The whole structure of what we think is normality is really a system which is held together by money. And it's not a happenstance thing for simply a bunch of elite to control. It's got a purpose and it's got direction, and they've always known the purpose and direction. And they literally plan centuries ahead at a time. And you know what? The first inkling I got of that was when I read the Communist Manifesto, and then watched the implementation in the Soviet system of a 10-year plan for one particular area, 20 for another particular area in the society, maybe 50 and 100-year plan for another. And then you find that the United Nations runs on the exact same principle. So it's like a huge investment business, really, this world. And like any big corporation, they plan out the next 100 years of investments. And that's really what they do. And so the major events within your life, just like 9/11, were planned long before it actually happened. Long before, they published their own books on it, like Brzezinski, talking about the necessity of a Pearl Harbor type event to motivate the public behind this war, so that they could invade Afghanistan first, then Iraq, then Iran, and then Syria. So these guys plan it way ahead. Now we know they all belong to these shady organizations, which the public have been conned into thinking are official government agencies, like the Council on Foreign Relations, but they are not. They're private institutions with an agenda, and they were created. That branch was created from the Cecil Rhodes branch of the Royal Institute of International Affairs in the late 1800s, in order to bring about a global government with three united trading blocs. So it's exactly the same as the Communist Manifesto.
Well, that would be the purpose of the Trilateral Commission.
It's the three trading bloc areas of the world.
Yeah.
And it's also the merging of the three parts of the American continent. That's all.
You know, Alan, I thought about this. You know, when America was first growing, there were 13 colonies.
Yeah, I know.
They were, well, what, just think about this, though. There were separate states. They were, you know, under the Articles of Confederation, Continental Congress, it had no power whatsoever.
Yeah.
And when they joined them all together into the United States, what's so different of that than the United Europe countries? I mean, I mean that was the beginning of it.
Yeah.
And you know, somebody mentioned this to me one time, and I checked it out and found that it was so. If you look at a map, each country is a different color.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if you look at the United States map, each state is a different color.
Yeah.
It isn't all one color, like America. And it pretty much confirms their awareness that these were separate sovereign nations at one time.
Yeah, and what it really is, and I'll tell you what really got me, I don't know if you saw the movie, it's called Gangs of New York.
Oh!
With Tom Cruise.
Oh! Gangs of New York.
It's an interesting...
Somebody was telling me they just saw it.
It's an interesting take on the gangs that ran extortion rackets in New York City...
From way back.
...in the 1800s. And how they competed with each other and fought with each other. But it also showed you the leader of one gang who was in cahoots with the early politicians. And they would meet every so often. And once the politician says, you know, the public are getting restless with the crime, we'll have to give them a sacrifice. Who can you spare? So the leader of the gang thought of three older guys that he didn't need anymore. He got them set up to be arrested,
oh,
and they publicly hung them.
So they were actually giving us inside information, weren't they, Alan?
Well, the end of the movie was incredible because at the end of the movie, the two major gangs were squaring up for a battle to see who was going to take over the whole territory, the whole city.
Uh-huh.
And it was the time when the American Civil War was beginning. And just when they're squaring off for fighting, in come these cannon shells from the brand new American Navy that was created.
Wow.
And they started shelling them. And then the troops came in, organized military troops. And the message really was, it was never said, but the message was implicit in what you saw. The biggest gang of all has arrived.
Yes.
The federal gang.
Well, now, you know what, maybe it was Jeff that saw it, but one of them, he said, was that they were actually rioting when they were going to initiate the draft,
mm-hmm.
and the federal government came in and shot them down.
Yeah, the biggest gang that had convinced the public. You see, extortion rackets run on threatening people, and they'll say to you, give me so much money and I'll let you stay open another
right.
week. Well, the government trained the public that taxation is different, because it's a different word, you see. That's all. It's the only difference there is. And they train you that it's somehow normal, and you pay them that money, and they leave you alone until the next year.
What's that got to do with... What does that have to do with initiating the draft, though? There was one, evidently, segment
mm-hmm.
where the people were actually opposing the initiating of the draft.
Oh, yeah, because they were well...
The instituting.
A lot of people were well aware that this war had bigger... It's actually like it's 9/11 again. It had much bigger...
Would that have been the First World War?
What's that?
When they were going to institute the draft, were they going to do it then?
Well, yeah, but they did it in the American Civil War in the North.
Oh, I see.
And so this new...
That's
federal
when
government...
they were opposing it. They were drafting people, weren't they, Alan?
Yeah, they were, uh-huh.
Oh, man.
And all you had was a business takeover of all the southern properties. It was a business. It was an economic war, like all wars are economic.
And do you think that was true that, because this was a movie,
uh-huh.
but do you think that was true that there was an opposition against it and the federal government came in and over...
Oh, it's recorded that there was a lot of opposition. To this, absolutely.
But was it recorded that the federal government intervened and came in and shot at them?
Oh, yeah. The federal government were sent to and also grab people who were enlisted and didn't turn up. So see, democracy is wonderful. There's no choice in democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no complaints department, you notice. It's one way or no way. And this is the system. But all it is one huge gang at the top. And that the federal government really is just the biggest gang taken over and instituting by law.
It was from the beginning, wasn't it, Alan?
Yeah, this is the same con game as the little gangs have been playing for years.
Well, actually, big time since the U.S. Constitution.
Well, the con part is good because really, I mean, it had meetings in Europe with all these top leaders of different countries. They were so used to having wars that they used to toss coins to say, well, whose turn is it next time to start a war? Who's going to win it? They'd all invest in the shipping and armaments and all the rest of it, and the league would benefit. It didn't matter who won or lost, they all
yeah.
won. And they had meetings, and then they realized that they couldn't take the whole world over. The way it stood, no one trusted London, because they knew this went into rape and pillage, and loot for London's sake. And I say London because these are the guys who benefited, was the big elite who live in London. And they couldn't use France because they had a similar story at one point. Spain too, they're all too old countries, so they had to create a knight in shining armor that would pretend to lead the world to a new world order, a Novus Ordo Seclorum. It's right on the seal there.
Mm-hmm.
And they created the United States as supposedly a champion for the world. And that's their job, was to bring the whole world under the one system, under a deception. And that's exactly what it's doing.
And that the United States of America was initially founded with this whole thing in mind. I read something somewhere one time about, was it the chair, the seat, George Washington's,
mm-hmm.
At the Constitutional Convention,
mm-hmm.
that there was a sunrise on it,
yeah.
at Masonic, mm-hmm. and there was debate on whether it was depicting a sunrise or a sunset.
Yeah. And Franklin, at that very speech at the table with Washington, when they toasted them as the Grand Master of these United States, and that's in Franklin's own writings, he talked about the picture behind them, the portrait, also depicting a Masonic sunrise and the chair. So this was well understood. These were all Freemasons
uh-huh.
with a job to do that the public would never understand until it was completed.
Well, for our listeners who may not have heard this, I have a book here titled An Economic Interpretation of the Constitution,
mm-hmm.
and it was written by Beard. I think it was Charles Beard. And I do know that one of our listeners in Ohio, one of the major supporters of the Sweet Liberty broadcast
mm-hmm.
while we were on shortwave,
uh-huh.
Had called me and said, do you know how I could get it? And I found it for him on ABE Books.
Mm-hmm.
But, Alan, when you read that book,
uh-huh.
and the names of each of the 55 men there,
mm-hmm.
what their background was, they were lawyers, they were land developers,
yeah.
every single one of them. There might have been a couple or three there
mm-hmm.
that didn't have at least apparently huge sums of money.
Yeah.
But they all, every single one of them, benefited when that Constitution was ratified.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the one, you know, that thing that Noah Webster wrote,
uh-huh.
that I will defend the Constitution with my last breath.
Mm-hmm.
Alan, that was me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know that, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it is. You think it's funny. I guess it is. It's kind of pathetic.
Yeah, but that's the conditioning everybody's got.
Oh, man.
Yeah. You see, the password...
But I just wanted to finish this. The name of the book again, folks, if you wanted to look for it, or even in your library, is The Economic Interpretation of the Constitution. And if it is not pleasant to read, but... As for me, I do. I want the truth no matter how hurtful it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Beard is his last name. I think it was Charles Beard that wrote it.
Mm-hmm. And it was a setup from the beginning. They had to make it look real. We know from the various Masonic writings that have been published since then that George Washington used to meet with other members of the British Army in their lodges during that war. And he even signed his name in their books. You know. So it was a sort of put on. Even Cornwallis, if you read the histories of Cornwallis, he led the party in Britain initially to allow America to become a separate country. And next thing you know, he's given the very appointment to oppose them. This is a Masonic ritual.
Wait, say that again.
Cornwallis actually stood up. He was a member of the House of Lords or Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
And he stood up in his own right, memoirs is recorded, and addressed the Parliament and asked them to allow America to be a separate nation, but still bound under the form of a Commonwealth, a British Commonwealth.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it would follow the same laws, etc.
And that was before the war.
Uh-huh.
The war, actually, the battle had ended. But the war wasn't really ended formally.
No, what I'm saying, this is before the war began.
Oh, there was the revolution.
Yeah.
Oh.
So he actually led
my.
The party to leave America alone, and yet the crown appointed him as the guy to go and oppose America. See, it wouldn't make sense unless he was then led on in the big secret that this was a show for the world.
I see.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Washington came out of that with I think, 20 miles more of square miles or more of land.
Oh, yeah.
So
when we were in Virginia at Natural Bridges,
mm-hmm.
National Park,
oh, yeah.
There was a big sign there, and the land was George Washington's. Lots of land, Alan.
Oh, massive.
Yeah. And they got the
people forget, too, is these landowners, they were big landowners. See, these weren't just little guys with a plot of land.
That's what I'm saying.
And these guys had all, and their families before them, had been given charters to own those land by the British Crown.
Mm-hmm.
Washington himself was trained in the American Colonial Army, the British Colonial Army. It was the British who trained him as an officer. And that's when he was inducted into Freemasonry, was in the British... when he served the British as an officer. That's in his own history. You know. So this was a set-up from the beginning.
Yeah.
Not only that, when you go into the password at the time for the French Illuminati, they would use a French word, which also is similar to a Greek word for spirit. The spirit in Greek is nu, is N-O-U-F. And so in French, new also means translated from the French to the English, and that was their password, was new, is U.S., us. So come on, I mean, this is the setup from the beginning. And then they put an Egyptian obelisk there for apotheosis to raise Washington to godhood. And no one asks why is an Egyptian obelisk standing in a supposedly Christian country.
Well, I'll tell you why. Because a lot of people don't understand it.
Yeah.
The Washington Monument, a lot of people don't even... Well, they know it's an obelisk,
uh-huh.
but they don't know what the obelisk represents.
Uh-huh.
And that it is ignorance. It isn't stupidity. It is because we're ignorant. You know, when I was first involved back there in 1990, late 91,
uh-huh.
And beginning to wake up and... anyway, one of our networkers, when we had the Council on Domestic Relations networking organization, he had been at the library. Now, this would have been probably around 93, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And he called me up. Well, he spent almost a year at the library researching and just blowing him away, blowing the librarians away. And then... he'd send me huge manila envelopes full of stuff that he was pulling up.
Yeah.
And he called one evening, and he started talking about the Freemasons.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how many Supreme Court justices are Freemasons?
Oh,
But he went on and on, and I said, Paul,
mm-hmm.
I hear what you're saying, but I said, listen to this, Alan. I said, what's the significance of all this?
Yeah, really.
In the whole scheme of things. That's I'm talking naivete.
Uh-huh.
I'm talking lack of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I said to him.
Yeah. Well, you always find the big obelisks are towering over a stretch of water, generally a rectangular.
The reflecting pool.
And the reflecting pool, because what you're seeing in the obelisk is the male phallus, which is also fire, over the water. It's over the female. That's what it signifies. That the water is female in the Kabbalah, you see.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
And so females, like Albert Pike said, it can only reflect the godhood or the light of their husbands, because if the moon can only reflect the sun's light, then what you're seeing with the obelisk and the water is the female can only reflect the glory of the spirit of Washington.
I see.
That's quite something.
We're going to take a break in 60 seconds.
Uh-huh.
I heard the tone, and that reminds me, you know, that comes right out of the Old Testament, or the New Testament,
uh-huh.
With Paul, where he said that the husband is the godhood of the family.
Uh-huh.
I told you about my, quote, friend who bragged that God was no longer present with his former wife and daughter because he was gone.
Yeah.
He didn't say it. And maybe he believed it, but if he believed it, he was gloating. Folks, we'll be right back after this. We're ready to take a break. So just stay with us. This is nice. I can hear the music, and I heard the tone. So We'll be right back with you, folks.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
If you read the history books, the most often asked questions of Southerners was this: why did you fight? And the most often given answer is, because you're here. In other words, the South did not invade the North invaded the South.
Was it the Civil War or War of Federal Aggression? John Weaver sets the record straight in this DVD series on the Civil War from the Old Pass Christian History Conference. Was there a war to set the slaves free? Or was it a war to enslave us all? Get this DVD and judge for yourself. War of Federal Aggression. Get this DVD presentation for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Call 559-781-3773. The truth seems strange only because we've been indoctrinated with a fiction. War of Federal Aggression. Get it today.
Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it, it has been traded, it has been borrowed, it has been purchased, it has been stolen, there's a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty, to ourselves and to our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188 or visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, and regular guest, world-renowned economist Robert Chapman, right here on FirstAmendmentRadio.com at 4 p.m. Eastern or 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, 1-800-375-4188. Years ahead of the dominant media, FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net, around the world and on satellite.
You know, Alan,
uh-huh.
You've said it many times. I think you said it tonight, maybe not, but they gave us all our heroes.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about, well, when I heard the commercial for the DVD, War of Northern Aggression,
uh-huh.
I thought back about, of course, what we were taught in history, and Abraham Lincoln was my hero.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember in the fourth grade, I mean, I was so impressed. And I, not because it was a required thing, I memorized the Gettysburg Address.
Mm-hmm.
That's how much of a hero Abraham Lincoln was to me.
Yeah.
And I wonder, for any new listeners that we might have, talking about the Constitution, and it is true that to me it was everything. In fact, well, it was everything. I mean, as far as our, quote, freedom and liberty, that's one of the reasons, Alan, that I can so relate to listeners, to especially new listeners.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't that I'm not an intelligent person, but I was so absorbed and believed, so trusting in everything that we were ever taught. And so I look back at myself and how naive I was. And that's why I know it's a tough pill for people to swallow when the truth begins to come.
Yeah.
And it's very overwhelming. But after you settle into it, then there's a feeling of gratefulness, of not anger, because I had my anger too, not at you all the time, but sometimes, but anger at all the lies we've been told.
Yeah.
And then I stopped to think about it, and I thought, instead of being angry, be grateful that you're finally wading through, and all of these lies are being dispelled. And what I, one more thing I wanted to say, I made a note of it, talking about the Constitution, talking about the, quote, Revolutionary War. If you're a new listener and haven't heard me say it, in the book online on our front page at sweetliberty.org, it's titled Jewish Persecution. And as you're reading it, you'll probably wonder what it has to do with it, because I was going to write an article and then decided I should have some background information, and it just took off on itself. But if you go to chapter 12 of that book, and chapter 17 of that book is where I really started delving into, it was Ralph Borzewski's book, The Constitution That Never Was, Alan. When I got that book, somebody sent it to me. I wouldn't even read it. I looked at the book and I said, this is just another book trashing our Constitution. And of course, now I know, and I have quoted especially the part in there where he tells about, you know, after the Constitution was framed and we were framed, it took a couple years before it was totally ratified. And one of the things that Ralph pointed out is that the judicial section of the Constitution was never completed. And they completed it with the first act that was passed by the Congress. And when they did that, Alan, they did it in secret, and what they were doing was inviting the states to send in their suggestions. That's when the first 10 articles of amendment were added into it. So everybody's eyes were on that ball while they were writing a bill that was huge. I mean, more text in it than the whole Constitution.
Yeah.
And it was passed, and our hero George Washington signed it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they did it, by keeping people's eyes off the ball, having them submit their suggestions for amendments to it before they were going to ratify it.
Well, what they love to do even today is pretend that they listen to the people.
Yeah.
And because that's the whole con that this is based on, is they pretend to listen to us. And then, of course, we scratch our heads when they go off on some weird tangent. This happens over and over and over again. But when you realize that, you see, you don't get into politics by being a nice person. You get into politics by joining Freemasonry to start with. And then you're taught to go and join boards, voluntary boards in your area. And these boards always have a guy on top who's always been there.
Uh-huh.
And he's a selector. His job is to select those amongst them who could be used to go up the ladder in politics. And when you get invited out by the guy at the top of the board to the golf course, then you know you're on a winning ticket.
Yeah.
And that's how the whole thing works. I've seen it myself. And so those who go into politics, they'll do anything, and I mean anything, they'll join anything as well, to get up there. They have psychopathic personalities to begin with. Only a psychopath can blush in front of thousands, cannot blush in front of thousands of people.
Right.
When they're accused of some of the things they're accused of. And they're so they live on pure ego, and they simply want to get to the top. They have no conscience about what they do. And so in this system, it's really a psychopathic winner type system, which you can see any time you tune into some so-called reality show like the Donald Trump show. You watch these young executives all stab each other trying to get above and get to lick the master's boots there. And it's the one who's most cunning and ruthless and very clever about it who gets the approval and gets to go golfing with Donald Trump. That says it all. That is what our system is based on.
Yeah.
It's a
dog-eat-dog
psychopathic system.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And that's the type that go into politics. They'll do anything, anything they're told to get up there. And that's why they can lie so readily to the public. And they must join some form of masonry. If they're not already born into it, they must join it.
Well, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
That was something evidently I knew
mm-hmm.
inherently, because my motto was, I'm not interested in politics.
Mm-hmm.
Leave that to the politicians.
Yeah.
And I told you that my Uncle Gar Lane was a state senator in Michigan for 26 years, came home from World War II with missing a leg.
Yeah.
And they talked him into running, I guess, probably on sympathy. But Uncle Gar got in, and what I was told, he was head of appropriations committee, a very powerful position. But when they wanted to run him for U.S. Congress, well, first of all, let me go back. He found out that I didn't vote. And he just went nuts. He said, it's your duty. It's your responsibility. I said, Uncle Gar, I don't know which butthead to vote for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, they're all crooked.
Yeah.
And, of course, he was a senator. But and I might be being naive here, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I am. Because my Uncle Gar and Aunt Ode lived in a very, just a regular little house, you know, with three bedrooms and a living room and kitchen.
Yeah.
Not a dining room or anything. I remember one time when they wanted to award him a gold watch at some banquet, and he said, thank you, but I can't take it.
Mm-hmm.
Because he didn't want to make it look like he's getting bribed.
Yeah.
And when they wanted to run him for Congress, and they said he'd be a shoo-in because he was very popular,
mm-hmm.
well, he was reelected for 26 years.
Yeah.
And he told me he wouldn't do it. I asked him why. He said, I'm not going out there. He said, hell. He said, they come up and give you tips on what stocks to buy.
Yeah.
What stocks to purchase. And he said, and then they get you in their clutches.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there might have been one honest politician.
Mm-hmm.
And never, ever, I mean, they never had, like, a cottage somewhere
mm-hmm.
or anything. I mean, they just live like normal people.
Yeah.
So I think my Uncle Gar was honest.
But, well, the thing is, though, people who swear oaths to something they don't even understand because it's a secret.
I know.
Tells you.
Well, yeah, but my Uncle Gar wasn't a Freemason.
Oh, okay.
No.
Okay.
No.
Because, well, if he was a Freemason, he would have taken all the little bribes and investments because the workman is worthy of his wages, as they say. It's a payoff system all the way up. It's a favor. They showed you that in The Godfather. The Mafia is a branch of Freemasonry. It's a branch of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. And Albert Pike trained Giuseppe Mazzini, which is Joseph Mason in Italian, who took over the World Lodge, basically, at the time. And he went over to Italy to create the revolution in Italy. And he founded, on one side, Mazzini founded the World Revolutionary Party. His successor was Lenin, and they called it the World Communist Party. Then they changed the name. But Mazzini also authorized the creation of the Mafia. And the Mafia is a Masonic lodge. Every side that seems to be fighting each other is actually part
exactly.
of the same head.
Yeah. Even the Jesuits.
Yes.
You know, we were talking about Tupper Saucy's book.
Uh-huh.
And when you read it, I had to do it. I didn't go out and resource and check out his footnotes and his bibliography and that.
Mm-hmm.
But the way he laid it out, it would lead a person to believe that the Jesuits were responsible for all kinds of terrible things. I mean, just about everything that happened.
That's right.
And yet, once you get it, you realize that it doesn't matter which one of them it is,
mm-hmm.
they're all controlled at the top
yeah.
by a higher and hidden hand.
All of them. And I'm telling you one other thing as well, for those who are into the New Age, you'll find that your gurus are also sworn members of the same lodges,
wow.
the higher lodges. Now, Aleister Crowley, who was sent out by the British Secret Service to do what he did, to set up cults, etc., that's who's at the head. Where would you go amongst the secret societies except the top, the secret service? the bottom. And Aleister Crowley went through all the different rites of the English rite, the Scottish rite, and so on. And when he went over to South America to take some of the drugs of peyote with a native tribe in South America, he said in his own book that he was initiated into the higher degrees of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry from a shaman in South America.
Oh, my.
They're all part of the same thing.
Oh, my.
And that's and guess who was pushing that in one of his books? It rhymes with Pike. he went over to try to do the same thing. So here's the same con game by the same people from the same country.
Why do you not say names? Is there a reason?
Well, I like to rhyme things.
I know it, but some people might not know what you're talking about.
Oh, they'll figure it out. Yeah. You'll figure it out.
Do you care if I say it?
But, well, that's in one of his books, how he went over there to supposedly the same road as Crowley took. But what he doesn't mention is that the shaman's also a Mason. Yeah. When the British came into Canada, and you'll see this in some Masonic books, they have the picture of Willie Bryant. Willie Bryant is the name they gave to an Indian chief over the Five Nations in Ontario. And they brought him over to Britain, and they gave him an English wife, a Masonic daughter.
Oh, wow.
Get the gene pool going again, family lineages. And Willie Bryant came back to America.
He was an Indian? He was an Indian?
He was an Indian, full-blooded Indian chief. And he sent half of the tribes to fight for the American side in the revolution, and he used the other half to fight against them. These are typical what they do all the time.
Alan, why do we call them Indians?
Oh, well, we know the con game.
No, but what I remember reading was that...
Yeah, somebody lost his way in a boat.
Yeah, he thought he was in the Indies, and so they called the natives here Indians.
Uh-huh.
Is it more, I'm not talking PC, politically correct, but isn't it more apt, appropriate, truly, to call them Native Americans?
Natives, because, I mean, let's be honest.
Natives, okay.
The big boys gave us countries.
Give us the names, the politically correct names, too.
Yeah. And they've done this all down through the centuries. They make the borders, they draw lines in the sand, and then they tax the people within to be on guard against those guys across that line there, who are now your enemy. And
yep.
This is how they've played this game all down through the centuries.
Yep.
Now Washington, you'll see in his main Masonic portrait there, he's got a few of them, but you'll see the beehive on the lower right-hand corner. I've got it in my first book. And now he mentions the Illuminati. That's recorded in history. And he tries to make out that he knows they're there, but he doesn't go any further. Of course he knew, because he was a member of it.
I have the letter.
That beehive was a symbol of the Bienen Orden, the German branch of the Illuminati. That's what they called it.
That's what the beehive is all about?
That's right.
And worker bees and all that?
That's right.
I have, allegedly, from one of the museums,
mm-hmm.
the letter that George Washington wrote to his Brother Masons, Freemasons, expressing expressing his concern about the infiltration of Freemasonry here by the Illuminati. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know, what a joke. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and of course, we also know that Jefferson was one himself, and that's why he didn't get in the first time. It's because it was known he was a member of it. After being initiated into France, but Benjamin Franklin was too, because when Franklin was over as ambassador to France during the Revolutionary War and living like a king, you should see the stuff that he went through in a week, even the booze, it was quite something. Franklin himself became the Grand Master of the Grand Orient Lodge of France. He was the top guy, and he initiated Voltaire into it.
You know what?
Yeah.
I think that's in chapter 17 of the book.
Uh-huh.
I think I've got that in there.
Okay.
You know what? Mm-hmm. When I got done with chapter 17, Alan,
uh-huh.
because I had that thought in my mind at chapter 12,
mm-hmm.
and especially reading the protocols, and they always take credit that every revolution that has ever been fought was promulgated by them. No,
they don't at all. That protocol is not who you think it is.
I don't care who it was. Whoever wrote it, Alan.
Because that was circulated in France in the 1800s.
Okay, I don't care who it was.
Yeah.
Whoever wrote it,
they
took credit for every revolution that had ever been fought.
Well, yeah, but even modern masonry books do that too. The brand new ones that are put out by masonry, they do take credit for all the revolutionary wars.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the hidden hand, we'll call it, I guess.
In fact,
because they're all controlled. The point is, when I was doing chapter 12, that was the first time the thought came into my mind, well, what about the American Revolution?
Yeah.
You know, that was our war of independence.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, well, why would we think that that was different than any of the others?
Yeah.
So in chapter 17, I finally got to it because it kept gnawing at me. And I went and I got done with that chapter, and I just sat there, Alan, and I just felt totally drained,
mm-hmm.
totally exhausted emotionally, mentally,
yeah.
to find out everything I found out when I went looking. It was really, in fact, I think I said that, of all of everything that I've learned so far, this about has been the toughest pill for me to swallow.
Yeah.
Our war of independence.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Well, it certainly made people dependent. That part's true. And it's made them dependent. So I guess that part's true. Yeah. But we live in an eternal, ongoing con game. Just like the nonsense we're going through right now with the 9/11 deal. In the late 90s, Britain tried to pass in the House of Lords, they put a bill through to pass a mandatory identification card. Nothing was happening
mm-hmm.
at the time. The Soviet Union was supposedly over, the Cold War was gone, and everybody's scratching their head as to why this was happening. The Attorney General for Canada was Alan Rock, who's now the UN Ambassador for Canada. He himself put through an omnibus crime bill, which is identical to the Patriot Bill.
Oh, wow.
He put it through in 98.
Wow.
They knew this was coming up.
Well, they had to do something to get it through, though.
Yeah, they knew it was coming up. They're getting all ready for it then.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how things are really run. It's not the guy in the front, the president or prime minister.
Oh, gosh, no.
In masonry, he's never the boss. You never put your boss as the guy who takes the heat. You see?
Yeah.
That's the job of a prime minister or president. They take the heat for the show. But it's the guy number two is always the boss.
Well, it's like this move to impeach Bush.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Alan.
Yeah.
And you
I
know,
love this fruit
but you know what I, huh?
I love to talk about fruit. You impeach them, and you can have a court of appeal, which is an apple, you know. So it's quite funny, all this Masonic chatter they give to the public.
Yeah.
Right in our faces, and we don't catch on to it.
Well, the thing I see is that so many of the people who are involved in this
uh-huh.
don't realize that, first of all, he really wasn't president anyway, not by vote.
Uh-huh.
But every president we've ever had was given to us
yeah.
on a silver platter, and even the choices we had for president,
because yeah.
they gave us, they let us actually think we had choices.
Yeah.
And that by getting rid of Bush, it's going to make some difference in the whole scheme of things.
Yeah, even though Kerry's already said that if he had gotten in, the same format and agenda in the Middle East would continue just as
well.
Well,
he
said he'd step it up.
Oh, yeah. He would fight it differently.
Because all on the books is a Masonic must-be, they call it, masonry. It's a must-be. When they make their plans, they don't fall back on them.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter which group, which color. See, this is a color-coding Masonic thing we're looking at here. Conservatives are always blue for the Blue Lodge.
Okay.
In every country, it's the same thing. They call them Tories in Britain. Their opposition is Labour in Britain, and they are red. You see? That's the Red Lodge. And then, of course, you have the Green Party, which is the green, is the primal colour in between. That's the one set over to take over the world into the new era. That's what the Green Party is about.
Oh, wow.
And, of course, we know that Gorbachev, when he was brought over to England by Maggie Thatcher and given the grand tour, he was knighted into the Knights of Lazarus. which is the Templar cross, but it's a green cross, and that's the one he flies outside the Presidio.
Well, yeah, what's the name of his organization? Oh, the Green Cross?
He actually has one of some global chatter. It's one of many groups, really. In fact, they run many groups, and they're funded again by the Rockefeller.
And there he is.
And the Ford and Carnegie
Foundation. Ensconced in the Presidio.
Uh huh. Yeah. And you know, he was given that was actually passed and licensed for him to run that place before he left as premier of the Soviet Union.
Wow.
Well, who's kidding? Who here?
And before he left, he made it well known. Communism is not dead, it just has another name.
It's what he said, in fact, and there's a great write-up in the Toronto Sun at the time about it by the foreign correspondent, and he did give the whole speech, and he said, don't believe it when you hear that it's dead.
Right.
He said, we're simply moving into the next phase, and that ties right in with what they found at the Rees Commission, that their job was, the big foundation's job, in America was to blend the American America into the Soviet system, into a seamless web, and that's what we're seeing, is a new system with a fascist elite leadership at the top, with a communistic style bureaucracy running the people below.
There's
the third way.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's another book I want to recommend to our listeners, and it's the one titled "Cogs in the Wheel" by Mikhail Heller. He tells all about this in this book, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would have to be probably gotten through ABE Books or one of the used bookstores.
Yeah.
And there was one more thing. The movie, I got into this last Wednesday when you had to leave early.
Uh-huh.
But I talked to myself too long and wasn't able to say it. Remember when you were saying how they entertain us? And they tell us what they're doing through entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing I was referring to was what's happening today with, you know, this Mexican thing.
Uh-huh.
And there was a movie that we watched. It probably is available in the video stores. I think we watched it on HBO.
Mm-hmm.
And it was titled The Second American Civil War.
Uh-huh.
And this whole thing, and it was billed a comedy.
Uh-huh.
The whole thing was about immigration.
Yeah.
And how the governor of Oklahoma, I think, said, no, we're not taking them. And then they started to choose up sides. The governor of Washington State took sides with Oklahoma. He was a Chinese man.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think I found out later that the governor of Washington then was actually a Chinese person. I might be wrong here. But, folks, it's called the Second American Civil War. And it's exactly what Alan was telling us. They build it as a comedy. I cried in that movie, Alan, because I saw what was happening. And I realized that there would be people who watch that movie, and if this happens in this country, they're going to go, God, that's just like that funny movie we saw. Remember that one?
Yeah.
Because it was built as
a predictive programming.
Yes, predictive programming. We're out of our hour.
Yes.
Alan, thank you for being here with us tonight.
It's a pleasure.
Get a good night's sleep.
I will.
And folks, Darren will be back with you on Monday and Tuesday. Alan and I will be back with you next Wednesday, barring any unforeseen events. Thank you for being here, and good night. Night, Alan.
Good night.
Who are you? That is the question, and the name of the program. To learn what the question means and what the answers are, tune in every Sunday afternoon.